A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 258. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Chimera. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This was a four-part ITV serial from 1991 in four 50-minute episodes. It was also known as Monkey Boy in the US.
Strange title, but yes, it was indeed.
Indeed. A young student stumbles upon a top secret government project to produce the chimera of the title.
Yes, and it's an interesting science fiction horror show from two creators that we've come across before on British Invaders. We'll talk about them towards the end of this episode. And of course, it tapped into one of the great concerns of the time, particularly when it was made, of genetic experimentation and embryology. Quite a lot of stuff to talk about as we go along.
Yes, and it's talked about things that have continued to be relevant, or possibly more relevant, since then. So it was interesting to see some of what was done at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Some good stuff. And an interesting setup for the first episode.
Yes, absolutely. So in the first episode, a young nurse takes up a lucrative job at this private fertility clinic in a remote location. And we have a spoiler for the end of episode 1 here, so if you really want to see this unspoiled, which is nice to do, stop listening now and do that. So that said, this nurse is killed before the end of the first episode in a terrible explosion that pretty much destroys this clinic and wipes out many of the patients and the staff, and is quite a dramatic moment.
Yes, and of course, we thought she was going to be our protagonist, but the attention switches in the subsequent episodes to her boyfriend that she left behind in London, I think it is, and he travels north to investigate. And he's going to find there was more to this fertility clinic than perhaps met the eye. There were some strange things going on. In particular, why would a fertility clinic need to have an animal experimentation laboratory?
Yes, that's right. And what has escaped from this laboratory?
Yes, something clearly has. You won't be too surprised from the title of the show, but we'll get to that in a moment. Meanwhile, we'll pick our way through the characters, and in particular, as we say, the slight switch or shift in the protagonist. So we begin with the nurse, Tracy Pickford, played by the actress Emir Gillespie. She is switched from the NHS to take up this extremely lucrative and well-paid job, although it does seem rather dull just looking after the patients at this remote fertility clinic. But even in the first episode, we do get inklings that there's more to this clinic than meets the eye, and she starts to make her own investigations. And as you say, Brian, she looks for all the world as if she's going to be our main character, but she is, as you said, spoilers, killed at the end of the first episode.
Yes, absolutely. And we start getting these inklings to there being a sort of extra security at this clinic and things going on that Tracy Pickford is told, you'll find out more about this when you're ready, and that sort of thing. Dr. Jenner, played by David Calder, very good actor. I particularly remember from Star Cops, a show we covered very early in British Invaders. He is apparently a quite benign director of this clinic and sort of fatherly character, but there is much more going on. And he is, perhaps in a very restrained way, the almost the mad scientist of this story.
Yes, great performance by David Calder. As you say, always nice to see him. Very accomplished actor. And he does a good job here as Dr. Jenner. And as I said, from we'll see him in the first episode when he parts with Tracy in London. But in the subsequent episodes, it will be the Peter Carson, played by the actor John Lynch, who you may recognise now as he plays Gillian Anderson's boss in the police procedural series The Fall over here in the UK. But here he is quite young, early on in his career, obviously. Our protagonist, a London... I think he's a student journalist or something. I wasn't entirely clear what he was doing. But he soon gives all that up because he's on the train north, as it were, to try and investigate the Jenner Clinic. But, of course, he's going to find himself in trouble with both the police, the military, and a sinister man from the ministry.
Yes, that's right. There are all sorts of conspiracy-type things going around this clinic, or what is left of this clinic after it is essentially destroyed.
And there, as we say, there's the police involved, first of all, and we meet Detective Shaffer, played by the actor George Costigan, a very familiar face on television, always working, always a good, you know, again, another very solid performer. He is the Hawaiian shirt-wearing police officer, the detective. I think it's we're told that he was just about to go on his holiday, and it explains the pale linen suit and the Hawaiian shirt, and it leads to a few humorous jokes about Don Johnson and Miami Vice, because he seems to be stuck in that outfit for the rest of the show as he's investigating.
I think those worked a little better in 1991 than they do now.
Possibly, yes. And he's interesting, I thought, because he starts out as a very authoritarian figure. You figure him as one of the bad guys. But as, again, as things unfold, he'll become a much more sympathetic figure as he begins to realise the scale of what might have been going on behind closed doors at the Jenner Lab.
Yes, absolutely. Alison Wells, played by Christine Cavanaugh, is one of the clinic scientists who is not there at the clinic when it is destroyed in this explosion. So she is one of the characters who is sort of fairly significant in the first episode and continues to be a major character throughout. And she is one of the clinic scientists who may provide the key to discovering and figuring out what's going on with the escaped creature, who is an important part of this.
Yes, more important as the show gets towards its final episodes, she becomes a very important figure.
Hennessy, played by Kenneth Cranham, is a mysterious man from the ministry who is coordinating military operation to recover this creature, the Chimera, and is also sort of actively suppressing information about what's going on and about the clinic, it seems.
Yes, couple of sinister performances. You know, we've mentioned David Calder, and I particularly liked Kenneth Cranham. I'm sure Kenneth Cranham has appeared in something where he was a kindly and gentle figure, but I always seem to associate him with playing sinister or nasty characters, and he does a good job here as this mysterious man from the ministry. And, of course, we've got to mention, particularly as we've said, that this was titled in overseas markets Monkey Boy instead of perhaps the slightly more oblique and mysterious Chimera, that there is the creature himself, known as Chad, portrayed by the movement artist Douglas Mann. It's a non-speaking part, which we'll talk about as we go on. He is the Monkey Boy himself, the creature that has escaped, that has caused the damage, and that has to be found.
Yes, that's right. And he is sort of gradually introduced to the story, where we sort of get glimpses and get impressions or hear things about him. And by the later part of it, while not a speaking part, he is fully a character and very important to everything that's going on.
Okay, so let's move on with the plot and let's get out on the windy and wild moors in Yorkshire, because there is, in a horror science fiction show, there is a creature on the loose. There is, of course, Chad is on the loose, wanted by the police for the murders of patients and staff at the Jenner Clinic. You know, our sympathies might lie with this poor creature, but actually from the first episode, again, spoilers, we do see that he's an incredibly powerful creature who does in fact murder people at the clinic. We don't actually see him in the first episode, but we see what he does. And it is quite, you know, it's grim and gritty. It's not nice. So he's not an altogether sympathetic character, although perhaps, you know, as I say, once he's out on the moors being hunted, it's difficult not to have some sympathy for him.
Yes, absolutely. We move from the character who is just attacking and killing people to more understanding of how he's been treated and maybe why he's reacting in these ways.
Yes, interesting.
And this creature is befriended by a couple of local children in echoes of stories like Whistle Down the Wind, and you get some humanization in a way. You know, he becomes a more sympathetic character with the interactions with these children. Peter Carson's investigations keep running up against the police and army, who are sort of shielding and concealing what's going on here. And he is soon in touch with this rogue journalist who has more information on the covert government ops that are involved in here.
Yes, that's right. There's a nice little turn by the actor playing a sort of rogue journalist who's got the inside stuff. And we get some sort of, I suppose, spookery, some sort of spycraft maybe, or investigative journalism, secret journalism going on. And Peter sort of running around, because soon, in fact, he will be on the run himself. Quite like Chad, the police and the military are after Peter Carson for what he may know or what he may be about to discover. And it will all sort of, as the episodes progress, as you've mentioned, Brian, as this character from the clinic, Alison Wells, who's a sympathetic scientist who perhaps holds the key to the truth about what the Jenner Clinic were doing, and also maybe the person who can help track down Chad and communicate with Chad, which is obviously very important. Can they get to him before the army do?
Yes, Alison Wells is an interesting character because it is ambiguous as to how good and how moral she is or is not, having been involved with this secret program and continuing this involvement after it's no longer there.
Yeah. We thought the leading lady was going to be Nurse Tracy, but it turns out it may be Dr. Alison Wells as we go along. So turning to our production notes, we've hinted at some interesting creators, because Chimera comes from a novel written or published in 1981 by Stephen Gallagher, who is a writer we've come across before, Brian.
Oh, yes. He has done some work on classic Doctor Who. He wrote both Terminus and Warrior's Gate. Interesting stories there. He wrote October, that's October with a K, which we've covered. He created The 11th Hour and wrote for both versions of it, which also was a series that we've covered and had a lot of very interesting things in it. So he's done some very strong work as a writer and creator in ways that often sort of push the envelope for the genre and the type of shows that he's worked on.
Yes, do pop along to BritishInvaders.com and search for October with a K or 11th Hour, and you'll find our shows on those particular series. Some, you know, stuff we quite enjoyed and found very intriguing and interesting at the time.
Yes, absolutely. Gallagher adapted his own book for a Radio 4 Saturday Night Theater production in 1985. And he was later contacted by a BBC location manager, Simon Moorhead, who was looking to move into becoming a producer.
Yes, and I believe he has become a producer since then, although I think what he mainly did was help develop the screenplay with Stephen Gallagher and then get it sold successfully to an independent production company called Zenith, who then sold it in turn as a series to the Anglia regional part of the ITV network, as it was then, and that's who, of course, it was made for. As I said, Stephen Gallagher wrote the script from his own novel. And then, rather fascinating, they secured the services of a very interesting director, Lawrence Gordon Clark. And it's not long since we were talking about him at Christmas, because, of course, best known to us for A Ghost Story at Christmas on the BBC, although he also did another M.R. James story on ITV called Casting the Ruins. But I don't think we've encountered him outside of A Ghost Story, Brian.
I think that's right, yes. And very interesting director, especially for these ghost stories. And of course, we have Gallagher adapting the script and writing it himself from his own novel. So we have interesting people involved with this, for sure.
Yes, and one of the producers, Archie Tate, mentions in the sort of the notes on the DVD case that with Lawrence Gordon Clark, they were very interested in trying to do a science fiction horror, something that echoed Nigel Neal's Quatermass serials from the 1950s, it says, but also embraced the poetic tone of Frankenstein and stuff like that. So, you know, deliberately sort of nodding back to classic BBC science fiction, great shows from the past. And there's another Quatermass connection with the crew as well.
Yes, the first assistant director, Bill Westley, had actually worked on the Hammer version of Quatermass in the Pit, which was from the 1960s.
Yeah, Stephen Gallagher mentions him in one of the home, sort of his own little production diary videos on the DVD set we'll be talking about in a moment, as being, you know, particularly important to this production, and what a sort of great background he had in genre stuff. So, yeah, interesting. The Nigel Neal connection.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the Frankenstein influence is definitely evident here as well. There are certainly elements of it being like a modernized version of the Frankenstein novel. There are a number of other things in here as well. But there are certainly elements of the original novel by Mary Shelley that come up in here.
Interesting stuff.
Image Animations were a cutting-edge sort of British special effects company, and they were brought in to do the creature mask and the suit for the Chimera, or for Chad, if you like.
Yes, I mean, they've got, as we say, a movement artist in a full-body suit and a head with animatronics and with prosthetics and different masks used for different close-ups and distant shots and so on. Interesting stuff in some of the special features about that on the DVD, and we'll talk in our next episode about how successful we felt it was.
Yes, it was definitely something they put a lot of effort into.
I haven't mentioned it in the outline, but I'm thinking that it did have quite nice, interesting opening titles with some sort of interesting swirly light effects. And it does have a piece of music by the artist Enya as the theme tune back then at that period of British television where all the series seemed to either have Clannad or Enya doing a theme tune. So there you go. Depends what you feel about her music, but here she is doing the theme tune for this show.
The influence of Robin of Sherwood lives on.
Well, I was just thinking that. It does feel a bit Robin of Sherwood, yes. Now, interestingly, before it was broadcast on ITV, this got, apparently, a full-length feature showing at the National Film Theatre. I don't know much more about it other than what Stephen Gallagher said in one of his interviews. But, yeah, it's rather strange. There was clearly a lot of interest in it at the time. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in the next episode, about some of the stuff that was going on in the real world that might have piqued the interest of the viewing audiences.
Yeah, that's a fairly big deal to have secured a screening like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chimera was broadcast on ITV on July 7th through 28th of 1991. And it was also sold overseas to the U.S. with the title Monkey Boy. It was broadcast on A&E on June 24th of 1992. And it appears that it is the 104-minute movie edit, or at least something similar to that. It was a shorter movie edit that went out, I think, in a two-hour time slot.
I'm fascinated and slightly appalled by the change of title, actually, Brian. It does seem a very, you know, what's the word? Dumbing down title to choose for this show, Monkey Boy. But there you go. Perhaps they thought that Chimera was too complicated a term, even though it's quite clearly explained in the show what a chimera is.
Yes, and that, I think, in that time frame, 1992, that sort of thing was a concern. Will people understand what this means and what it's about, and, you know, changing the title to make sure they do. That, I think, was a much larger phenomenon at that point in the US than it is now.
Okay. I should actually add that while I was doing some searches, there is another show that you might find called Monkey Boy, which appears to be an Italian science fiction show, which looks like it's got a very similar theme. I don't know if it's a loose adaptation of this as well. I don't know if Sabrina's still listening, but if, you know, if she is, do get in touch and let us know if you've heard about an Italian version of Monkey Boy.
Yes, this idea does seem to be something that's come up from time to time.
Intriguing.
So we should talk about the availability of this show.
Yes, let's get you watching this show yourself so you can make up your own mind. So here in Region 2, as ever, we do, we've had some releases. It was released on VHS. This was the 104-minute movie version, which Lawrence Gordon Clark described as a terrible edit, which made no sense to the story at all. So we're not interested in that, and it was VHS anyway. What we're interested in is the DVD release from 2010, two discs, all four of the complete original episodes, production diary features, as I've said, made by Stephen Gallagher himself, videoing himself, some stuff on set, some stuff in the special effects lab where they're building the prosthetics and the animatronics and fitting the suit onto the movement artist. There's a quite lengthy interview with Gallagher about the development of Chimera. There's an image gallery. There's even the script of the radio broadcast version, which I haven't looked at, but that's there as well. Now, something strange has happened that when I bought this DVD last year, it was readily available on Amazon because we like to cover shows that are available to get hold of, but it now seems to have been deleted. You can still find copies on the secondary market through Amazon, but I don't know if it's an actual sort of in-stock DVD anymore. You're looking to pay probably, based on my viewing today on Amazon UK, £13 to £15 for the DVD, which we'll talk about in the next episode as to whether that's worth it or not. And also compare it with another show, which strangely wasn't available, but now may be available, if that makes sense. I'll clear that up in our next episode. Meanwhile, however, in Region 1, Brian...
In Region 1, there is no release, but the Region 2 DVD is still floating around on Amazon.com for about $23. So there are copies of this floating around, used and that sort of thing. So that's the way to get a hold of this at the moment.
Okay, so it is available. It is out there. You can get it.
Indeed. Stephen Gallagher's original novel is available on Kindle, so you can get an ebook of it. That I have not had the chance to read it. If anyone has and wants to comment about that in our Facebook group, I'd love to hear about it. The radio version has also been repeated on Radio 7, which is now called Radio 4 Extra. So that's the BBC radio production of this from the 80s being run on BBC's radio network.
Yes. If, as you say, Brian, if you've read the book or if you heard any of the radio broadcasts or if you know where the radio broadcast perhaps can be found, do get in touch with us. We'd love to hear about those different versions of this show.
For sure.
And I probably mentioned we don't encourage this. It is currently up on YouTube. The quality is terrible. These things do tend to get taken down, but you can go and poke around on YouTube and you will find it there at the moment. As you know from listening to British Invaders, we are very keen to actually purchase content legally because we think it encourages the more of this stuff and also for the DVD companies to put out the DVDs that we want to get hold of. Or increasingly, I suppose, streaming services. But anyway, I'm sure our listeners know what I mean, Brian.
Absolutely.
So that will do us for episode one. We're going to come back next time. We're going to talk a little bit about the story of Chimera. And particularly, we're going to focus on this aspect of how it was perhaps, reflecting popular fears of science and technology that was going on at the time. We'll talk a little bit more about Chad, the creature, and sort of build up towards the climax of this show, but without trying to give too much away.
Absolutely. There are some interesting things to talk about with the issues at play and that sort of thing. And of course, we will give our reviews and recommendations about whether you should find the DVD for this or not.
Absolutely, yes. We'll tell you whether to try and buy it yourself, yeah.
So until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group there, where we always have some fun discussions about British TV and science fiction and related things.
Yes, and you'll also find us at the Voice of Geeks Network. That's VogueNetwork.com. British Invaders is one of a host of shows. We're on a Monday and Tuesday night. You'll find plenty of other stuff there to whet your appetite.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for listening. This is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. And I will try and explain the other DVDs when we come back next time. Until then, it's Eamon in England also signing off.